Hey, 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 beautiful souls. Welcome back to the Dope Black Chick Podcast. I'm your host, Kimberly Spital, and I'm thrilled to have you join me today. In this episode, guys, we are diving into a topic that's close to my heart. Pretty much every episode is close to my heart, but I'm also sure that to many of yours, it's close to yours as well, balancing work and personal life. Now, we've all been there. We're trying to juggle our careers, our personal lives, and everything in between that, right? And it's like, it's a chaotic circus. That's the best way that I can explain it or give it, you know, words to how it feels sometimes when you have everything going on. And we're going to dive into that feeling. We're going to dive into, you know, how to cope with that feeling. What does that feeling actually mean? And what is it saying to you? And like, we're going to discuss all the things surrounding that topic. And I'm just so happy that you joined me. So stay tuned and let's unpeel the onion, shall we? Okay, so let's start by acknowledging the elephant in the room, okay? As Black women, we often face unique challenges in the workplace, from navigating biases, microaggressions, to proving our worth. And it's not just about managing time, it's about managing energy, expectations, and often the double duty of home responsibilities. It's a lot, but we are not alone in this struggle. So let me go back to discussing or unpacking, you know, in the workplace, navigating the biases and proving our worth. Microaggressions, gosh, they are so taxing. They are so freaking taxing. Let me tell you, now I work for a Black company, right? Black owned, majority Black staff, all of that stuff. So I'm going to say blessed not to have to carry so many microaggressions, but sadly there are still microaggressions there because you have the mindset that has the mindset of microaggressions spill over into our community because that is what a person has been told is quote unquote professional, or, you know, the Black community has basically been given this guideline of what professionalism success looks like, and it doesn't look like us. So even when we're in Black spaces, we will attempt to assimilate to that guideline, to that rule book. And even amongst our own people, and we perpetuate stereotypes and we perpetuate these microaggressions. We can perpetuate microaggressions in a black space. I cannot speak this morning. But yeah, like that actually happens. So I'm not going to say that I'm totally void from microaggressions. I do experience them sometimes. However, it's different, you know, for me when it comes from my own people, because it's like, bless your heart. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. In a way, for me, that's how it comes off. Like, I'm like, I feel sorry for you. Because I understand, like, I'm the type of person, like, I never take something negatively because I know there's a root to it. And so when something like that is said, like, I've had someone say that they didn't think that locks looked professional, right? And I'm looking at that person like, I hate that for you. Like, I really hate that for you. Like that was my mindset. Like, I really hate that you think that. You know what I'm saying? But then I understand why this person had been in a corporate space for like 20, 30 years. And for them, they were told pretty often that it wasn't, you know, professional, or maybe not even told, but just made to feel as if they weren't as professional because of their locks, because they actually had them. So, you know, I've heard things like that. I hear things like, you know, that's ghetto, you know, it just kind of all kinds of stuff. Like the way that we talk is not professional. That jargon isn't professional. I'm like, what? Like, what about the culture? You know, because we've been told that, right? We were told for a very long time that ain't wasn't a word. Now it's in the dictionary. That's all I'm saying. It's like you have to own what you want to own. So I am fully 100% aware that some microaggressions spill over into Black spaces. And so dealing with that, I went on a rampage, but dealing with that, you know, is very stressful, right? And I remember the first time I had a therapist, right? And when I went to my therapist after Ahmaud Arbery was killed, right? Oh my goodness. It was like silence. We just sat there in silence. I boohooed and she boohooed. And it was like, we didn't need to say anything. It was just, you understood me, I understood you. And having the freedom to express myself and to, you know, because I did a whole long cursing out everybody, you know, and just the pain that I was feeling, and for it to be accepted and, you know, appreciated. And also to be like, she was like, that's exactly how I feel, you know? And in that moment, she was like, I'm not going to try to be professional. I'm not going to try to do, you know, whatever, blah, 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 people think I should. I'm just going to express my feelings alongside you. And it was amazing. But we don't get that every day. We don't get that every day, which is another reason that I am a staunch supporter or advocate for therapy. I tell people all the time, it's important for you to find a therapist. Because there is no feeling like being able to get that off your chest with someone who understands, and someone that will, even if they don't understand, they give you the space to vent and argue and let your frustrations out. That to me is the most taxing challenge, that the mental health aspect is the most taxing challenge that a woman, especially a Black woman, has to deal with when she's balancing her career and her personal life. You know, to me, that is the hardest thing, the mental health part of it. And then let's talk about managing our time. Like, oh my God, as if women don't have busy enough schedules. Like, we already have to take care of everybody or take care of our homes. And a lot of times it's not a requested thing. Like, it's not a spoken thing that you're supposed to take care of your home. It's just a obligation. You know, people just expect you. You're the wife. You're supposed to do this, this, and that, you know, and I'll come up with rest, but this is just how you're supposed to move, or I'm a mom and this is what I'm supposed to do. I can't speak from a mom's perspective, but I definitely, my dog is sniffing at the door, y'all. I don't know why. Is anybody out there, Hershey? Anyway, I'm sorry about that. But yeah, it's like expected of you. And it's almost, when do you have your time? Where's your time? Now, if you guys have been following the Dope Black Chick podcast for the past 2-3 years, then you already know I was very staunch on selective time for yourself, setting that time, creating that boundary, and not moving to it. Today, as a married woman, I still 100% believe in that. You have to schedule time for yourself, because if you do not put aside time for you, there is no one else. No one else is going to just offer that to you and say, oh, don't worry about these responsibilities. Your responsibility to yourself is much better. Nobody's going to ever do that, right? So you have to advocate for yourself when it comes to managing your time. And then it's about managing your energy, these expectations, all of this stuff. Like, it's so much that is put on Black women. And I think because it's been done for so many millennia, and our mothers, God bless and rest their souls, like they have carried it and done it, even if it was like breaking and killing them and tearing them apart, they still were able to carry it. Doesn't mean just because I carried it, I liked carrying it. No, I did it because it's how we got through. And because that has happened so much and for so long, people just continue to expect us to do it, right? They expect Black women to be able to, you know, work the 9 to 5, take care of the home, take care of the kids, take care of the family, be the neighborhood, you know, love, be the neighborhood mom. They expect her to be able to run her own business and to deal with shortcomings and make a dollar out of 15 cents. Like, she's supposed to be able to do it all. Because if you can't, you know, my mama used to do it. Your mama should have. I know you, your grandma did it. Like, we all have those stories of, well, she only had this and she made it work. She had 15 kids and she did. So we end up putting that back on ourselves. And so it's a ridiculous expectation that we get from outside. But not only that, we have it inside. We have this expectation inside. In ourselves, we are comparing ourselves to our ancestors and saying, well, if they were able to do it, then I can do it. And then, you know, it's just a ridiculous expectation to be able to juggle. You also got to remember, they didn't have 1,014 things to do. You know, they had a lot of things to do, but they had a lot of things to do for the time. Now you're trying to add the things for their time with the things for your time. It's like, it's a lot. It's a lot, sis. It's a lot. And I just want you to know, you're not alone in the struggle. It doesn't matter if you're single. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, a motherless child, a motherless woman like myself. It doesn't matter if you are a mom of one or six. We all are in the struggle, period. And I just want to make that clear. So let's talk about some real stories. I could talk about myself, but I want to talk about some of my listeners. I did ask my listeners to share your stories about balancing work and life. You know, did this on social. So if you're following us on our Instagram page, make sure you stay tuned for like little questions I'll drop here and there. And boy, did you guys deliver. So I want to share a story from a friend, not a friend, but a listener from Atlanta. Her name is Tasha. She says, I'm a single mom and an entrepreneur. Finding time for myself while running a business and being there for my kids is a constant battle. Listen, I don't have kids, Tasha. I don't have children, but baby, I already know. The role of an entrepreneur is hard enough. And being a single mom on top of that, like I have single mom friends. Well, I had single mom friends. I still have a single mom friend. And I know what she went through. Like it was just, even from what I saw, was difficult. And I didn't even know the full picture. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of the times, like I really used to just, how can I help? How can I help any way that I could? But I can't even imagine the mental anguish, the emotional part of that, and just the stress factors. Like, I can't imagine what that feels like and the pressure that it feels like. You know, your strength, Tasha, is inspiring, you know, and it's stories like these that remind us of the resilience and resourcefulness we possess. But I still want you to carve out time for yourself. You know, even if it's, and I know that was your thing. You said finding time for yourself is a constant battle. But babe, even if it's just 10 minutes, if you set your alarm 10 minutes earlier to take 10 minutes of solitude 10 minutes, like drinking your favorite coffee. I don't care what it is before the rest of the world wakes up. Like, or if it's 10 minutes at the end of the night, it doesn't matter where you have to put it. Just find that time, because I guarantee you, if you take the first 10 minutes or 5 minutes for that matter, but if you take those first few minutes, it's going to reveal to you even more spaces that you can put that time in. That 10 minutes is going to turn into 30, or it's going to turn into multiple opportunities throughout your day or throughout your week. Or it's going to turn into, you know what, once a month I'm doing this for myself. But whatever it is, you will find the time, but you first have to give yourself the space to acknowledge yourself. You have to give yourself the space to appreciate you. You have to give yourself the space to find the time. And I hope you do so. I really do. So how do we find that elusive balance? Right? First, let's talk about setting boundaries. I talked about this earlier. I've been saying this from, honestly, I said this before I ever got married the first time. And then I said it even louder because I had an appreciation after my divorce. And I'm so blessed that I married the man that I married, who is, my husband is amazing, okay? And he understood fully that he was only interested in the woman that had set boundaries for herself, right? So that is so beautiful. He understood that I love her because she puts herself first. I actually love the fact that she stands up for herself. I actually love the fact that she will advocate for herself, even over me. That is the sexiest thing ever. Like he was so... He used to always tell me, like, that I love about you, because it was making him stand up for himself, making him cut out time for himself. And so I have a husband that understands this is what I like about her and I don't want to change it. So I want her to continue to keep herself first. So he will remind me sometimes, do something for you, babe. Make sure you're doing what you got to do for you. So setting boundaries, ladies, I know it may feel like, yeah, that's kind of difficult to do. But actually, it's not. Actually, it's not difficult to do. It's more or less of us not wanting to hurt anybody's feelings. I think that's the difficult part when it comes to setting boundaries. Like, we know what boundary we want to set, but we don't do it because we're like, well, I don't want them to feel like I don't care. I don't want my child to think that I'm not the best mother. I don't want, you know, my husband to think that I don't love him anymore. I don't want my friends to think that I've just kicked them to the curb. Like, those are the things you say that keep you from setting the boundary, but you already know what you need to do, right? Like, I don't like when my girlfriend called me and she always got some mess, right? If that's the thing, then set the boundary that says, girl, I ain't trying to hear that. Don't call me with no mess. But you won't do it because you're like, I don't want her to think I'm not here for her. That's the reason you never set the boundary. And we have to get past that. We have to, again, put yourself first. If when she gets on the phone, sis got you drained and she just got you like, oh my God, when is this ever end? And then after you get off the phone, you don't even feel it. Like your energy is low. That's not good for you. So why would you rather be her venting place so she can feel free after she get off the call, but then you're walking around feeling low? Like, that makes no sense. This is the thing. Set the boundary for yourself. It's okay to say no or to delegate tasks. And remember, self-care is not selfish. It's essential. And also, planning and prioritizing can be game changers. I have planners. I have tons of notebooks. Whatever it takes to be a list to tell me to do this tomorrow in my phone, like, it's crazy. I do it. But identify what's most important and give that your focused intention, your focused attention, and make it an intention to be your focused attention. Yeah, I remixed that. So I hope that is helping you kind of understand or set you up to be able to set boundaries. But I really want you to think about, why am I not setting boundaries? What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you have a boundary that you want to set, but you don't enforce it? Tell me what that is. Like, I would love to hear that, you know, response. So that'll be the question that you guys can answer. And then maybe next week we'll answer those on the show. Not next week, but next episode, we'll answer those questions. All right. Now, let's answer some of your questions. I did get a question from Nicole in Houston. Shouts out to you, Nicole. Hey, y'all listen to me in Houston. How do you handle workplace stress without bringing it home? That's a great question, Nicole. My go-to strategy is a transition ritual. Like after work, take a moment to decompress. Maybe it's, you know, going for a short walk. For me, meditation, or listening to your favorite song. Whatever it is, it helps create a mental separation between work and home. And if you work from home like me, I actually like to get up from my desk and, you know, leave that room for maybe an hour or so. So I actually leave the room, I leave the office, and I make sure that I separate the top floor is like work and the bottom floor is relaxation. So then I'll come downstairs, spend some time with my honey, and, you know, just decompress, you know, play with the dog, and then I'll float back up if I need to finish anything else. But when I'm done for the day, I literally turn the lights off in my office and shut the door. I'm not going back in there, period. Unless I gotta get a book. But I try to stay away from that. Like that's just a transition ritual. All right, as we wrap up, remember guys, there's no one size fits all solution to balancing work and life. It's about finding out what works for you. And I hope today's stories and tips have given you some idea or some ideas that you can experiment with in your own life. You don't have to do exactly what I do, but I would hope that you try to, you know, add something to your life and so that you get the most out of it. Because I know that this is a struggle for a lot of us, right? I want to thank you guys for tuning in again to the Dope Black Chick Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and share it with your friends, with your girlfriends, your associates, everybody. Stay empowered and remember, you're not just balancing work and life, you're creating harmony in your world. Until next time, guys, peace and blessings.